Order.
Resuming after a week's adjournment, Parliament began a three-week sitting period with questions for ministers, with nearly half of the daily dozen about the state of the economy in the wake of the latest fall in dairy prices. The government kicked off with the first question, a patsy for its finance minister, Bill English, from National's chief whip, Tim McIndoe.
My question is to the Minister of Finance. What reports has he received on the outlook for the New Zealand economy?
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Bill English.
Well, a rather more thorough report than that. Mr. Speaker, I have received a report. I've seen reports where Fonterra have revised down their forecast payout from $5.25 to $3.85 per kilo of milk solids. Now, this reduction will clearly have a significant impact on the dairy industry and dairy-intensive parts of the economy. But it isn't a particularly surprising downgrade as it reflects the ongoing reduction in the international dairy price. Now, Fonterra has at the same time announced a higher earnings per share of 40 to 50 cents and an optional interest-free support payment of 50 cents per kilo of milk solids. It's clear that for dairy farmers, times are turning out tougher for longer than forecasters previously expected. But the additional measures announced by Fonterra on Friday will offset that to a certain extent.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question, Tim McIndoe.
Thank you, sir. To the Minister, what effect will the fall in milk prices have on the wider economy?
Honourable Bill English.
Well, it will certainly have a big effect on the dairy-intensive parts of the economy. A drop in revenue of this magnitude in the dairy sector will have flow-on effects to the wider economy because the dairy sector makes up about 20% of New Zealand's exports and around 5 to 6% of the total economy. The automatic stabilisers, though, are providing support to the dairy industry and to the benefit of other industries. For instance, the New Zealand dollar is down 25 cents against the US dollar in the last 12 months. And this underpins the returns of all exporters, not just those with dealing with low prices. And the Reserve Bank has cut interest rates, the overnight cash rate, to 3% and indicated this may fall further. The Reserve Bank's most recent forecasts of the economy show that the economy is growing around 2.5% a year, which is solid, sustainable growth.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Tim McIndoe.
Thank you, sir. What other reports has the Minister seen on the economy?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr. Speaker, in its monthly economic indicators released last week, Treasury said that most indicators remain around their long-run averages, with the exception of dairy prices, and are consistent with an economy growing around its trend rate of 2 to 2.5%. Statistics also released the latest employment figures last week, where unemployment increased from 5.8% to 5.9%. At the same time, the average wage increased 3.2% in the last year to over $57,000, considerably faster than inflation of 0.3%. Of course, there are a number of risks to the economy, well-known risks such as the uncertainty around Greece, some uncertainty about China's growth prospects. So there is some chance that we could move away slightly from the 2 to 2.5% growth rate that we are seeing now.
First supplementary question from an opposition MP came from the Greens co-leader James Shaw.
Has the Minister of Finance received any reports that show that the New Zealand economy will face a $7 billion hole as a result of low dairy prices? And what specific measures is he putting in place to ensure that distressed dairy farmers are supported through this commodity price crash?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, yes, I have seen those reports and I'm pleased the member asked about it. Because in order to understand the context for this, that $7 billion reduction is a reduction on nominal GDP of over $220 billion. And so when you look at it that way, you can see that it's going to have a negative effect on the economy, but a containable effect and we can continue to grow at moderate rates. With respect to dairy farmers in distress, the governments have had in place for some time measures for those families who are in severe financial distress, but generally the government would not be looking to financially support dairy farmers because of low prices.
A supplementary question, James Shaw.
Does he regret telling Radio New Zealand in March that the concentration of capital in dairying was, quote, not a bad thing, end quote? And how will he now ensure that this overallocation of resources into one sector doesn't now put out of work thousands of farm labourers, retailers, contractors and suppliers who all rely on dairy farms?
The Honourable Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, the flow of capital into the dairy industry has been based on a longer-term confidence that across the Asia-Pacific, fast-growing class of middle-income consumers will show more demand for dairy and other protein products. And that is a view of the world that's not really disputed by anyone in particular. In the short term, however, the reduction in income will, of course, have an impact on employment directly on dairy farms, but in the supporting towns and services. The measures announced by Fonterra last week and the positive indications from the banks that they will finance cash flow for dairy farmers over the next 12 months means that it won't be as bad as the straight drop in income indicates, because dairy farmers have to spend $4.50 a kilo just to get the milk on the truck.
Next, it was the Prime Minister's turn, with John Key facing questions from opposition leader Andrew Little.
My question is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by his statement that New Zealand is on the, quotes, cusp of something special, end quotes? If so, was that something special rising unemployment along with plummeting dairy prices?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, yes, I stand by that statement for two reasons. The first is that I'm positive and aspirational for New Zealand, and unlike some people who are always talking the country down. But actually, the second reason I stand by that statement is I made that statement on a couple of occasions during debates in the 2014 general election, and we were on the cusp of something special, the worst pounding the Labor Party had ever had in the history of the party.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Given the number of people who are unemployed has risen by 13,000, and that unemployment in Taranaki alone is now 7%, and there are hundreds set to join them due to major job cuts announced recently, isn't the truth of it that he's sending more and more families to the cusp of poverty?
Absolutely.
Well, Mr Speaker...
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
The government has created, along with the people of New Zealand, of course, but 148,000 jobs over the last 2 years. But, Mr Speaker, I note the Labor Party has an interest all of a sudden, apparently, in farming. So when prices go up, it's nothing to do with the government. When prices go down, it's everything to do with the government. They're not asking, why are beef prices high? Is that the responsibility of the government? But, Mr Speaker, I make this simple point. The Labor Party wanted to put a huge number of costs on farmers. That's that was right. Their policies during the election.
That's right. Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Given that Westpac says there will be no more job growth this year and the economy has grown at just a quarter of the expected rate, hasn't he driven the economy to the cusp of recession?
Yes. Mr Speaker.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
If the member goes and reads the Westpac report, the glimpse that I had a look through it, it shows that growth will be between 2 and 2.5% over the next 3 years.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Why has he failed to invest in diversifying the economy, neglected regional infrastructure, and turned a blind eye to the 35,000 jobs lost in manufacturing since 2008?
The right order, the right honourable Prime Minister.
The member needs to get out a bit more. It's as simple as that. Because if you go around New Zealand and have a look at what's happening around New Zealand, Mr Speaker, you'll see just how diversified the economy is. Tourism spending alone is up over 20% from last year, over $8 billion. The ICT sector doing well. Kiwi fruit growing back from the lows of PSA, Mr. Speaker. Beef farming doing extremely well. Horticulture doing well around New Zealand. Manufacturing, 33 months in a row, the PMI has been expanding. The services sector, export education. Mr. Speaker, the only people that think the economy is solely dairy is the Labor Party, and they wanted to tax those people to the brink of extinction.
What a supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Did he receive any official advice to back up his claim that a new flag would add billions to the economy, or was he making it up just like usual?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
I do think changing the flag over time has very significant economic benefits to New Zealand. And the reason for that is because if you go and have a look on the Herald website today and you'll see New Zealanders voting, and I noticed Mike Hosking's column today actually talking about genuine debate about the flag. Oh, that's right. That's right. Just remind me, it's Labor Party policy to change, but they don't want it. And Andrew Little was on his live chat 10 months ago supporting change, but today he doesn't want to do it. Mr. Speaker, when we have a flag that is of the ilk that we see today, actually it will be on our goods that are sent around the world, and that will have huge economic benefit. But the bottom line, Mr. Speaker, is this. If the Labor Party are telling New Zealanders they simply mislead them with their policies, order. Why would order. You believe in any...
Order. The answer's long enough. Order.
Prime Minister John Key, who also faced this question from Andrew Little.
Does he stand by his statement that dairy prices are likely to be low for, quotes, a little bit longer, end quotes, given the latest auction was a record low?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Given that dairy farm prices have already fallen by 18% since peaking last October, what preparations has his government undertaken for dealing with increased sell-offs by insolvent farmers who can't make ends meet with dairy prices so low?
Have done over the course of the last 7 years after straightening out the mess we inherited from Labor and with our very strong economic management is to make the economy more efficient and more productive. And, Mr. Speaker, here's a bunch of things that we haven't done. We haven't bought the ETS in straight away. We haven't put a large tax on water irrigation. We haven't put a capital gains tax on every farm. We haven't increased the minimum wage to 2/3 of the average wage. We haven't taken money out of the Primary Growth Partnership, and we are in favour of TPP. Mr. Speaker, the Labor Party are claiming they are the farmers' friend. They were the policies they took to the election.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
What is the government's response to the reports that, contrary to Bill English's claims, the banks are already forcing mortgagee sales on indebted farmers, and what's to stop more of these farms being bought by overseas investors?
Mr. Speaker, firstly, I'm sure that the banks will work closely with farmers as they typically do, Mr. Speaker, because there is $35 billion worth of debt, I think, approximately sitting on dairy farms. But, Mr. Speaker, one of the things the bankers will be looking at is they'll be sitting there and looking at the policies of a National-led government, which are supported farmers. They'll be looking at the proposed policies of Labor, which are anti-farmers, and they'll be saying, thank goodness, National's in government.
Order. Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Given his government has rubber-stamped 296 sales of sensitive land to foreign buyers since the start of 2012, how much more land is he prepared to sell overseas?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
I think it's important to note that government doesn't, for the most part, actually sell land. Land goes through the Overseas Investment Act and the Overseas Investment Office, Mr. Speaker. As we know, the percentage of sales overseas is relatively small, and actually New Zealand's not seen as necessarily the easiest place actually to buy land. If you look around the OECD, we have as many restrictions as most other countries, in some cases more.
Supplementary
question, Andrew Little.
In light of his government having voted down a Labor bill that would have protected farms against being bought up by foreign investors, what steps is he prepared to take to ensure farms that are sold during this downturn won't end up in offshore ownership?
Speaker, this is what would have driven farmers off the land. going into ETS straight away, whacking a massive new tax on irrigation, putting a capital gains tax on every farm, increasing the costs of wages on every farm, having less money in science and innovation, and being opposed to trade. It's pretty simple, Mr. Speaker. Farmers in the dairy sector are subject to an international commodity price, which is clearly on a bit of a downturn at the moment. And last year, it was in quite a big upswing. In fact, actually, if you look between 2002 and 2006, the on-farm forecast was about the same as what it currently is today. Mr. Speaker, it's not new. Apparently, in all those years when Labor was in office, it was fine. Today, it's not.
Supplementary question, Andrew Little.
Can he confirm that there is a late entry in the flag referendum, a map of New Zealand with a for sale sign over it?
Yeah. Well, the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, the member really actually needs to sort his game out, because either he wants to go onto his website and change his policy, which is to change the flag with a referendum, or he should actually realise that he's playing stupid politics with actually something that could seriously benefit New Zealand. And that's why Labor continues to poll very poorly, because in the end, they're just opposed to everything the government's in favour for. Not because it's a good idea or a bad idea. Otherwise, they must be misleading New Zealanders, because this is their policy. And when you were on your little chat room a wee while ago, you were telling people you're in favour. Were you misleading them deliberately? I don't think so.
Back to the government side and a question from the National Member for Rangitikei, Ian McKelvey, for the Minister for Primary Industries, Nathan Guy.
What reports has he received on the outlook for the primary sector exports?
The Honourable Nathan Guy.
Situation outlook for primary industries for 2015 highlights the medium to long-term outlook for our primary sectors is indeed positive, while SOPI forecasts that some sectors like dairying will experience short-term volatility. Overall primary sector exports should increase by 17% to $41 billion by 2019. Importantly, SOPI highlights the long-term trend of global income and population growth, particularly on our Asian doorstep. This will provide an opportunity for New Zealand to continue growing its customer base for sustainable economic growth, indeed boosting the regions.
Supplementary question, Ian McKelvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What does the situation outlook for primary industries 2015 highlight about the short-term volatility in the dairy sector?
The Honourable Nathan Guy.
Speaker, SOPI highlights that large price peaks are often followed by price falls and then recoveries. At the moment, the world is pretty much awash with milk. China has taken longer than expected to come back into the market. The removal of the European milk quotas is expected to increase the world supply of milk. The Russian sanctions are also having an impact on some of our traditional markets. However, as this report highlights, the medium to long-term outlook for the dairy sector is very positive. Just one example, Mr. Speaker, a 1% increase in income is estimated to increase the demand for dairy products by 0.8%. As the incomes of developing countries increase, so will the demand for New Zealand dairy products.
Supplementary question, Ian McKelvey.
What is the outlook for our other primary sectors?
The Honourable Nathan Guy.
Mr. Speaker, that's a very good question. Strong growth in the meat, horticulture and seafood sectors have helped to partially offset any decrease in the dairy sector and have very strong outlooks. In the meat sector, beef export revenue is up by 30%. And we are likely to fill our US quota for the first time ever. Total meat and wool exports are expected to increase by almost 11% to $9 billion by 2019. Strong growth in kiwi fruit and wine exports are driving horticulture export revenue past $4 billion and forecast to reach $4.6 billion by 2019. Seafood export earnings are forecast to reach $1.8 billion by 2019, driven primarily by aquaculture planned expansion growth.
The Minister for Primary Industries, Nathan Guy. Question time was followed by the House forming itself into a committee of the whole for the New Zealand flag referendums bill and the remainder of the annual estimates debate, which is in a new format this year, as Rhys Lyon discovered when he talked to the newly appointed Deputy Clerk of the House, Rafael Gonzalez Montero.
The estimates are basically the minister's spending plans for the coming financial year. These are presented after the budget, and they are always preceded a couple of months earlier, but by the budget policy statement, in which the Minister of Finance specified the policy areas the government plans to focus on in the budget and what the goals of the budget will be. The budgets are generally arranged by votes. Votes are basically group of individual appropriations corresponding to ministerial portfolios. After the budget has been delivered, the estimates then refer to the Finance and Expenditure Committee, and the committee may conduct the examinations themselves or can refer to another committee, and those committees have to report within 2 months of the budget.
And so they've been reported back from select committees now, those votes?
The votes have been reported, yeah. And so that's why the estimates debate is taking place at the moment. So what happens is there are sectors in the debate, and they are divided into 10 specific sectors. So to give you an example, economic development and infrastructure, environment, finance and government administration, justice. And so they are divided in those blocks. And obviously the role of the opposition parties is to hold the government and the ministers to account in what they've said they're going to spend the money on and what they've achieved.
And this is a changed format for the debate than in previous years?
It is a change in format. So in the past, the debate was quite different and quite general. This year, it's been divided into 10 sectors so that the there can be a focus on each of the different sectors. So within a sector, there are different votes. And one other exciting change about this year is that the chairs of committees are the ones that are leading the debate. So they get the first call in the debate, and then there's a structured way for each party to have their allocation to be part of the debate.
And it's along the same lines as the annual review debate?
The annual review delayed was earlier this year, and it is a similar change, but not exactly the same. For the estimates, the debate has been grouped together in sectors. So from the Treasury, votes come as put into sectors, and the debate has been adopted along the same lines of the budget documents. With the annual reviews, it was a little bit different in the sense that it was divided into themes. So the business committee has decided to try the two different ways of doing things, and it will probably decide over the next few months which format they would like to adopt for the next annual review debate.
And what are the select committee's roles in the estimates debate?
So the select committees, once the votes get referred to the select committees, the select committees will hold hearings of evidence about their reports from each of the votes. And they will have a look at how the vote is being spent. It is the chance for the committee to ask questions of the ministers about how they plan to spend that money over the next financial year. They send some estimates questionnaires as well, and based on the questions that they get from about the different votes, they will ask questions of the minister, and then they will produce a report about each of the votes, which will then get debated in the House. So select committees play an important part in scrutinising the spending plans of ministers.
And it's sort of informing the debate in a way.
It is informing the debate in a way. So the business committee this time determined that, as I mentioned before, the committee chairs initiate the debate under each of the sectors, and the business committee has made a determination that each chair is to refer to the reports, the select committee reports, under each of the votes. So yeah, they do play a really important part.
The debate, as you mentioned, is a committee of the whole House. What does that mean?
Committee of the Whole House is an expanded select committee, but it's made out of all the members in the House. So the it's made of a chair as opposed to the speaker sitting in the speaker's chair. It is the chair. The minister is to the right of the chair, and the clerk sits to the left of the chair. And that's the opportunity for members of all the parties to have 5-minute debates about the specific topic. The debates focus on a specific parts of the bill, and you need to remember that this is in itself is a bill. So it gives the members the opportunity to debate the clauses or the parts within the bill.
How are speaking times allocated for the different parties?
So when you count 11 hours that are available for the estimates debate, it allows for about 132 5-minute calls. So 8 5-minute calls were allocated to debates on each of the 10 sectors, and it was done mostly based on proportionality. But to give you an example, given that the committee chairpersons are asked to lead the debate, they will get one call. Mm-hmm. A minister will get 3 calls. The Labour Party gets 2 calls. Green Party will get 1 call, and New Zealand First would get 1 call. Then they will get supplementary calls, so that's additional calls to that first allocation, which translates in roughly 52 extra calls. So it's mostly based on the proportionality in the House.
How's that decision made as to when they get the call?
That will be at the discretion of the chair. So the chair will see probably that the minister is seeking the call, and if he has given the call to another party, he will probably take note that the minister wants to reply or take a call, and he will allocate the call next time the minister wants to speak.
How far can they stray from what's been reported from the Select Committee in a vote? I mean, sometimes it seems like it's quite off topic sometimes when a member's speaking.
It may sometimes it may seem like that, but you will see that the chair in Committee of the Whole House will try to keep the members relevant to the votes and the sectors.
Yeah.
And so you will see that that is the role of the chair of the Committee of the Whole, and they do ask some members at times to keep on topic.
Is it common for the estimates debate to take a back seat to government business or other things that are going on in the House? We've seen it in the last few weeks. You know, there was a snap debate, and there was the government wanting to make progress on the flag referendums. Is it normal for the estimates debate sometimes to take a back seat?
No, it is not. But the business committee and the government sets the agenda for the proceedings in the House. So there may be some times when they will have had to make choices about what is debated first, and in this instance, probably the estimates debate had to be deferred a little bit.
The new format of the debate was decided by the business committee, and you mentioned before that they're sort of still working on which model to adopt.
Yeah, as I said, there's been two models tried, one based on themes and one based on the sectors. So within the Office of the Clerk, there's some work going on in terms of how it worked, and probably there will be a proposal to the Business Committee as to how to do the annual review debate and what format it should take. So watch this space.
Deputy Clerk of the House, Rafael Gonzalez-Montero, talking to Rhys Lyon about the estimates debate, coming up this week as previewed by the Acting Leader of the House, Christopher Finlayson, in his business statement before the adjournment.
When the House resumes on Tuesday, 11 August, the government will look to continue the committee stage of the New Zealand Flag Referendums Bill and the Appropriation 2015-16 Estimates Bill. Wednesday is a Members' Day.
And coming up on Members' Day, a bill from Labour's David Parker that would bring payments for services performed under contract into line with the legislated minimum wage, and another from Labour's Stuart Nash that would reinstate the requirement for a poll of affected electors in each district or region to ensure support for changes to the organisation of local authorities. Both bills will be coming up for their first readings on Wednesday after the general debate. More on our website at parliamenttoday.co.nz. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was brought to you with funding from Parliament.